Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather round the radio. It's time for This Life.
Children of all ages.
Children of all ages.
Yeah.
Gather around the camp, the fireplace. Turn the radio on. Oh, wait a minute. People listen to this on their phone on the way home from work in their car.
The only thing about working with Steve-O is you don't have to introduce him because everyone knows his voice right away. It's like, oh, I know Steve-O's on this one.
Yeah, it's
there
crazy.
You go. So you were in. But every
good,
time
man.
I see him, I think of Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Yeah,
sure.
Well, the one. Hey, producer, be quiet.
We're already on air.
We're podcasting.
We're broadcasting live.
You know. Every time, not every time. That one of the first times, maybe the last time you're on the radio, Steve goes, "God damn it! Everyone wants me to be on their fucking podcast. Everyone's got a goddamn podcast." And when I heard that she had booked you, I'm like, "Oh no!" I felt so guilty.
Yeah, you're completely exempt from that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're completely exempt.
But
from
I felt
that.
The same way because I was being asked to do stuff too. I'm like, "God, he is so right."
We've reached a point in the world where that's just like the most annoying question. Like, let me be
on
your podcast because every schmuck has one. So. It's like, oh, you know, I made myself a little rule. I won't be on it unless I've heard of it.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
But I keep breaking the rule.
For instance, today.
You're exempt. I love both of you guys so much. This was a no-brainer.
Well, I appreciate it. So you've been flying all over the place, man. Where have you been going?
I have, man. I mean, of course, I'm still traveling with my comedy tour, and that's going strong. I'm like real happy doing that.
All U.S. or are you going?
I have been a little bit of Canada and like all U.S. I understand that I'll be going to the U.K. and Europe coming up pretty soon.
Good.
But yeah, we just went on a surf trip to Madagascar, which was something else.
Who? A bunch of friends?
Just me and a couple sober guys.
Yeah.
We do that. You
Madagascar is like where the lemurs are and stuff, right?
That's right. Yeah, we fed lemurs. We discovered that they eat like slobs.
Really?
That was the funny thing. Yeah, they
Primate.
Really. Once I said that, then the video of them eating the bananas is really funny.
I was trying to, for some reason, I was trying to find an old video of you. My son and I got some conversation about something. I don't know how we got into it. And I found myself saying, well, how about when Steve-O got crapped on by the elephant?
Oh, right.
And I couldn't find it.
Ah, man, there's a still shot. I could send it to you.
No. Because, because the comedy was he got peed on, then crapped on, and then vomits.
So, right. And
you threw up?
Of course.
Yeah, we were in India. We were filming something or other. But then here the elephant just proceeded to pee.
And
I forget if I was instructed to or if I just dove under it, but I just kind of like got under it, and so it's peeing on me, and like it's really funny, and then like it pooped at the same time.
Well, he started drowning, so he tried to make an escape via the rear, and
pow! Right, and then
pretty heavy and, the poop, and, right?
You knocked him down.
And then I tackled our director, Jeff Tremaine. He was pretty upset with me.
Where is everybody? Are you guys still hanging out, or...?
A few of the other guys, actually five of the other guys, just completed an Eastern Canada tour where they're all doing stand-up, telling jackass stories. That was Wee Man, Pontius, Preston Lacey, Danger Aaron, and Dave England.
I think I saw a picture of Pontius. Maybe it was Pontius. Looked really good.
Pontius really looks great.
Yeah,
he's I don't know how because...
Uh-oh. I was hoping there was a reason.
Right. No, but it's good. You know, Pontius, I think all the guys are doing reasonably well. You know, I mean, we worry about Bam, of course, but I saw Bam recently. He wasn't in terrible shape.
Good.
Yeah.
So here's the thing about you guys. You really invented something or reinvented a 20s kind of thing is what I always saw. First time I saw it, I always tell the story. First, I didn't know anything about this jackass thing. I didn't watch MTV. I'm at this fundraiser, and they say, oh, these two guys are going to introduce the Chili Peppers. And I thought I was, or Robert Downey was, or something. And I'm like, who are these two guys, him and Johnny? And they go up there, Steve,
I stapled my nuts. I stapled my nuts to my leg.
I was standing 10 feet away from it, and it was like, what did that guy just do?
Why is he doing that?
Yeah. That was
You were not sober then.
No, I was not. Even though I have no problem stapling my nuts to my leg in sobriety.
So anyways, I mean, it's gotta be for a pretty good reason. Thing that's now copied by so many things, because Elvis is 5 now, going to be 6.
Okay.
And my little son.
Sure.
We went to the Nitro Circus thing, right?
Well, those guys...
They were a long time ago.
Those guys, like, that's just X Games stuff, you know? You can't say that they're not doing their own thing, you know?
But it's got that same camaraderie.
That's not Jackass derivative, you know? I mean, there are...
Their show is. When they're jumping over things in their backyard and all
right,
that kind
but
of
they're
stuff.
Just on such a higher level. I mean, they're so much more intense. Like, we were always, like, really kind of silly and goofy, and those guys are, like, heavy-duty motocross, like, super...
Athletes.
Yeah. Those guys are far more athletic than we ever were.
Where'd you get the idea?
What, for Jackass?
Yeah, where'd that come from?
I mean, it just came simply from... growing up on a skateboard,
the skateboard led me
to the video camera, and I wasn't that great at skateboarding, and I just felt inclined to put down the skateboard, but not the video camera.
Steve went to clown school.
I know. Uh-huh. Yeah. Barnum and Bailey.
Initially, I was at the University of Miami right out of high school, and I just couldn't bring myself to go to class, and... instead, I'd go to the pool, the University of Miami Olympic pool, and I got really kind of fell in love with learning, like, to do sort of different terrible flips on the diving boards and stuff, and then I just started looking at apartment buildings and stuff and bridges, and so I took what I learned on the diving board, and then I went and started climbing on roofs and going for pools and off bridges and stuff. And it was when my buddies, who were actually NCAA divers, you know, diving for the University of Miami, saw me come back with a video of doing like flips into like really shallow pools, and they wince. They're like, "Oh my God, you're crazy!" Like, and that really, like, I felt like, wow, if these guys are impressed or they're freaked out, then I'm really onto something. And that put a lot of wind in my sails. And so I was just dead set on pursuing just being a maniac with a video camera, and that was it.
And the clown school came after that?
Yeah, because I had dropped out of the University of Miami to pursue...
Had you dropped out, or had they asked you to leave?
They asked me to leave.
So he dropped out.
They asked me to leave the dorms. And that made it a little tougher to go to class. But yeah, so I don't know. I was like kind of homeless for a while on the way out of the University of Miami. And
you tell your dad?
I didn't talk to my dad at all for like 6 months, and I was like,
you're avoiding that, or
well, I just like I it was just kind of a pride thing. I was sort of ashamed of myself. I certainly didn't have it in me to ask him to support me when I felt like, you know, I'm not really doing anything that he would sanction. Yeah. So I can't ask him to pay me to be a piece of crap.
That's what I was shocked. Like, you're so respectful of your dad.
I love
my dad.
I
wish you could encourage more of your followers to be respectful of their dad, because it is Father's Day. And you've always, like, even back then, I can't imagine how crazy you were at 20 years old, but you were still so thoughtful towards your dad. And I noticed that when we first became friends.
Right.
He's so thoughtful and respectful.
It's not like his dad is like Bob Dylan. His dad's more like John McCain.
I know. I know. I've met his dad.
Right. My dad's hilarious. But it was tough because I was too
was
ashamed.
Was it fear or was it shame?
It was shame. I was just too ashamed to pick up the phone to call him. And also, it's like, what am I going to tell him? Like, hey, how you doing? Oh, I'm doing great. I've got the government testing drugs on me, like, you know, in somewhere in Texas.
Just making a little buck here now.
Yeah, that was having, like, these crazy drugs. Because the medical studies that you get into, the more dangerous they are, the more they pay. And so I was having...
Look at Dribble.
How did you find out about
that? I just there was some guys I knew that had done it before. So we found out about this medical study where they were testing drugs for pigs and cows on people.
It was
so ridiculously
dangerous. How much
dangerous
would something like that pay?
Two grand?
$2,000?
Well, for how long? Initially, it was supposed to be $1,500, I believe. And it was 10 days for $1,500, I think. The target of the study was to they were going to give it to us, and they just wanted to give us the drug until somebody's resting heart rate reached 150 beats per minute, which is pretty good, you know. It's pretty intense. And as we reached the end of the study, we weren't getting there. And so they said, hey, guys, you know, like, there were only six of us. Normally, studies have way more people, but it was, like, super dangerous, and it paid a lot of money. So there were only six of us. And they said, hey, guys, are you okay with us extending the study so we can give you more of the drug to get you where we want you to be? And we'll give you an extra $500. So, you know, $2,000.
Oh, my God, dude.
And I think that made it go from 10 days to 12 days. And, you know, I mean, it was great.
Did you hit 130?
Dude, I it turned out, have like the strongest heart.
Yeah.
They had us on an ultrasound with the monitor babies and stuff. But this was like even more high tech, such that the blood that was entering the heart
was red.
Yeah, and
it
as
was
it
blue.
Came out of the heart,
yeah,
it was blue.
It was the other way around, blue and then red. Yeah.
Right, it could detect the oxygenated blood. Yeah. Like, it was unbelievable. And No, it's the other way around. So great. I love
this is what you're doing after you dropped out of school.
Yeah. I mean, fairly. I dropped out in...
Human guinea pig.
I dropped out in November, and the plan was to go get a job at a ski resort in Squaw Valley in Lake Tahoe. Yeah, Squaw Valley Ski Resort, and they weren't. It wasn't
from Florida
snowing.
To Squaw Valley. How are you?
Well,
do that?
I jumped in the van with this buddy. We had $600 between us. We got in the van in Miami, and we drove all the way to Northern California to start a new life. And and it wasn't snowing when we got there, so we hooked up this other guy. We caravaned to Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and one of us got the job there. You know, and I was like cleaning the meat room in the supermarket, and it's just and the other guy. And we drove from there to Austin, Texas,
to
and
do
did
the
medical study. Yeah, we got there and. We got there and we had to apply to get in, and we were just like sleeping on a roof in like a rooftop, and except when it was raining, and then we were like behind this abandoned Chinese restaurant. So like we were homeless in the streets for 2 weeks waiting to get into the study.
I think more kids need to do that, Drew.
Right.
I swear to God.
If for any reason I didn't get into the study, I was prepared to push a shopping cart through Austin, Texas. That was going to be my life.
You could have formed a band. There was a lot of bands in Austin.
It was so well, no, I couldn't do anything. I was not.
But what you're saying, but what Bob is saying is, you know, we're dealing with all these young kids right now that have zero motivation.
Right.
What's the difference?
I was so good at being homeless. Like,
but I mean, what's missing for them that was driving
the adventure,
you?
The thing, the Jack Kerouac thing.
I guess. Like, I don't know. I mean, for me, it was like
the life force.
I can't
out
imagine
of the
any of the kids I deal with who are usually 19 to 26. You said, get in the van. We're going to Lake Tahoe. They'd be like, right. Why? What?
What do
I
got to
call
do
my mom. I got to text my mom.
I remember stealing books, the like used books from the Salvation Army. Like, they're only 25 cents anyway. and then when I would like do backflips for change or whatever, you know,
the
like
street?
Yeah, for sure. I would scrounge up like 50 cents so I could like go buy.
That's
like,
an American success right. story right
and
there.
This was the best method for me, right? Like whatever, I would like do tricks in the street for some change, and then I had like 50 cents. I would go to the supermarket with my 50 cents. Now I'd go to the, like, I'd steal a pack of hot dogs, right? But it's not like, you don't want to just steal the pack of hot dogs. What you want to do is you want to make a legitimate purchase.
Because
that
one.
Way, so you stick the hot dogs in your whatever, and then
I'm sure they've never seen this.
And then you go through the line and you actually buy a 49-cent loaf of bread. You can kind of sense if they're on to you about the hot dogs. So,
oh, you're like, oh, I forgot this.
Well, oh, no, you can tell if they're on to you. So you legitimately buy, a loaf of bread, and then I'd walk out, and now I've got the bread and the hot dogs, and then I go from the supermarket to the 7-Eleven or the Circle K
the
and put my hot dogs into their microwave.
and get to catch up with Munster.
Exactly.
But now, wait a minute. There's something missing from this story. You're still paying for drugs, though, through all that.
No,
right?
Well, not at that point, no. It's weed. Not really. Like, weed? Because I actually had flushed out my system because the drug test was part of the study.
The oh, yeah.
So I was like, when we were in Steamboat, it was this, like, you know, couch surfing, and these poor girls that hadn't let me stay in their apartment, I was drinking so much water to flush the THC out of my system that I peed on their sofa. Right, but no, it wasn't. This was January of 1994, long time ago, man. I was 20 years old. I was still 19. Yeah, I was 19 years old. Like, it wasn't so crazy that I was, you know,
I'm just
saying, I wasn't so far down
more,
the line. That,
I never thought I'd say this, but we need more kids 19 years old that are willing to do stuff like that. Not necessarily criminality, but just right. Take a chance and go live life. What happened to the old thing from the 50s where you're supposed to join the Peace Corps?
Our son's doing
what
that.
What happened to that?
Our son's doing that.
Well, how come Americans don't know about that?
They do.
Nobody's
doing
it.
In fact, the reason he's doing it, he's right now working in an Outward Bound camp. He's doing kind of the Steve-O life a little bit. No backflips, but... and he's going to go to Peace Corps because there are no jobs. There's no way to distinguish yourself for business schools or graduate schools because you can't get a job.
When I was in sober living, at one point, I forget what it was. Like I was not convinced that it made sense for me to try to pursue a career in entertainment. I was like, man, here I'm like sobriety and like, you know, you got to like sort of, you know, like yeah. Smash the ego. And how can I try and be Steve-O? That's such an ego thing. And I just at one point came up with the idea, I'm going to join the Peace Corps.
Yeah.
And I got on their website and stuff and found that it's actually really difficult to get into the
Peace Corps. It is, yeah, it is.
I swear it is.
You have to really work at it to get in.
You have to be a college. You have to be a college graduate for starters, and then like this and that. They just
they want teachers and things mostly. That's a lot
right.
of
right. And
a lower version, like a Steve-O Bob version.
We have to work
for
it. Workforce America.
I don't know, but thank God that they are as sort of exclusive as they are with the Peace Corps, because I would have been one to bail. That's what they don't want, is people to sign up. And you're supposed to do it for like a whole year.
2 years.
Oh, 2 years, yeah. And people just are like, whoa, this sucks, I'm out. You know? They want people that are going
to
actually stick with it.
All right, we need programs like that for young
people. We have to take a break.
All right.
We're welcoming our new sponsor to the show. They are called Bergamet Mega Plus, and this is actually a supplement, and it's a supplement I can get behind. Within a couple of months, I'll be reporting on some of the benefits of this thing. What it is, it's derived from some of the extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. It's endemic to the Calabria region of Italy. And bergamot is rich in what's called polyphenols, and polyphenols are known to reduce the risk of heart disease. The Italian government actually funded a bunch of research on this. Now, Bergamet Mega Plus is a natural, what you would call statin, or in scientific terms, HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. Much like the medication that we take, but milder, and again, it's a natural source. It has properties that also may lower triglyceride, raise HDL, even more so than a statin. So if you have high cholesterol or lipid issues and you can't tolerate statins, this is something you might really consider. Also, for others, in a nutshell, Bergamet Mega Plus can address conditions faced by millions of Americans worldwide, namely increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, and high blood pressure. Taken together, that is called the metabolic syndrome. And usually physicians will prescribe pharmaceutical agents, weight loss, that kind of thing. And in this case, Bergamet Mega Plus may offer benefits above and beyond the usual recommendations. Be sure to talk to your doctor. Cardiologists, physicians all over the world have been recommending this product, Bergamet Mega Plus. Its effectiveness has been documented in many scientific peer-reviewed publications. And as I said, as a result, it's something that I can get behind. I'm excited about. I'm starting to recommend it to patients. So to learn more, visit bergamet.com. That is BERGAMET.com. Or click on the Bergamet banner on our website. Hey, welcome back. It's Steve was our special guest.
Talk about the drug that you love,
Drew. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's Bergamet, BERGAMET. And
are drugs only things that are man-made?
What do you mean?
What is the definition of drugs? I don't even know.
The pharmaceutical agent versus the food. The levels, the pharmacological
activity. So what makes morphine a drug if it comes out of opium?
It's non-physiological.
Okay.
I think I'd describe it that way. Anyway, if you go to the website, bergamet.com, you can
I think
get,
foods are better than drugs.
If you buy two, you get one free. And again, I am persuaded this is a good product for people that have elevated cholesterol, metabolic syndrome, and particularly if you're statin intolerant.
So we're getting along the Steve-O storyline, but what I want to know...
Are you a fan of Lipitor?
I take Vitorin myself, yeah, because my cholesterol was always LDL 120, 140, no matter what I did. I take a quarter of a tablet of lowest dose of Vitorin, my LDL 70. It's ridiculous.
What's LDL?
It's the bad cholesterol. I would take the Bergamot if I were not on the Vitorin because it works very similar. It's very similar.
I just got blood work and they said everything was cool.
Yeah, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Why do you ask about Lipitor? Is your dad on Lipitor?
My dad's on Lipitor, yeah.
The Lipitor is sort of the best one. It's the most potent one.
Yeah, I've had like low testosterone, but now it's good.
Weird.
Yeah, I don't know. So
like, could you feel it? Could you feel a difference?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, like I was plagued with fatigue for the longest time. I'm sure I complained to you about
it. Well, God, knocking, busting your nuts the way you did five. I'm surprised you have balls anymore.
Well, right, but
they
but,
just
but,
shriveled up, went away.
I'm talking about fatigue, dog.
I'm just saying. I'm not busting
a nut.
I'm saying your testosterone gets low, makes you fatigued. That does do that.
Oh, okay.
And if you had your ball squished too many times, they don't function normally.
They weren't squished so much as kicked.
You know, I've been pretty selective about like, I don't hit my balls all the time, you know? Like, I reserve that for special occasions.
Speaking of that, the sex addiction stuff, is that still something you're involved with? Or
you know, like, sure, absolutely. I'm totally on, like, and I'm frustrated in it, you know, because as you know, I did complete celibacy for over a year. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, I was exceptionally grumpy for over a year, and that's about all I accomplished, I think.
No affect emerge or anything, no feelings you couldn't have accessed otherwise? Or
I don't know. I don't think so. And then I've tried to be in a couple relationships after that and just failed miserably.
Why?
I don't know. I think I just chose relationships poorly. But you know, in one sense, I guess like a function of like the love addiction,
yeah,
is that I get like really head over heels and super crazy. And then sort of, a little while into it, I just sort of
pull out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I've got that as a real pattern. And now where I'm at with it is just, I guess, sort of, you know, my all things considered, fairly liberal circle plan at this point, you know, like where, you know, there's
a fairly liberal circle plan. I like that. we need sex with Emily here.
Right. But what I mean by that is that I just have rules that you know, rules of engagement. Mm. You know, it's like any circle plan, and I guess it's working pretty well for me at the moment.
So let me ask you this: this is one of the themes of our show is about life, and what we're noticing is the millennials and the young adults and the 26 and 27, and you interface with them as fans, you interface them as sober people. You interface with them, probably have cousins and nieces and nephews, right? How are you, Steve-O, the guy that kind of invented crazy, trying to wise up and mentor 19 and 20-year-olds? Because I know you are, because I know your heart is good and you want to help.
Yeah, I mean, like mentor.
Or
like,
are you seeing the problem we're seeing? Because, you know, Steve keeps active people around him, you know what I mean? People that want to go live.
The kind of lost lack of motivation generation.
I mean, I certainly, like, if like we're not like too uptight about, you know, talking about 12-step and sponsorship.
No.
I you know, I have a terrible track record with sponsors, which is fine. You know, like, I used to get kind of bent out of shape about it, like, oh man, kids are coming to ask me to sponsor them for the wrong reasons. They just want to, you know, like, you know. And so I do, like, whenever a kid asks me to like sponsor them, I always say, hey, sure, you know, as long as you don't identify me as your sponsor, you know, like, it's just like,
that's,
I try
a good
to
one. I never heard that rule. That's a good one.
I just try to maintain my anonymity, because basically I tell them I don't do this for credit. I don't want credit, and I don't want hundreds of kids going around saying I'm their sponsor when I can't even remember their damn name because they never called, you know?
Yeah.
So I try to make that a rule that they don't identify
me. Do they adhere
me.
To it?
I mean, who knows? Probably not. And who cares? You know, my sponsor told me, he said, hey, so my sponsor's great, by the way. You know, whenever I have a certain issue, it's, oh, well, this or that, you know, he's so quick to remind me there's only one book. There's not a special edition for special people. There's one book.
I love that.
The same book for everybody. You know, it's just the same book. So, And I'm encouraged to welcome people. Just, you know, he says, hey, you know what? Like, maybe someone's going to come to you for the wrong reason. They're going to stick around for the right reason. Mm-hmm. And certainly I got into recovery with faulty motivation. You know, initially, there was definitely a carrot I saw dangling in the, you know, wow, like all of this great stuff's going to come out of this. If I can, you know, if I get clean and sober, the world's going to owe me. I'm going to have all this opportunity. It's going to be like a real resurgence of Steve-O. And you know, I just wouldn't put down the camera. And I was, you know, and you remember me.
I remember.
Like early sobriety. I was a nightmare.
And I felt the same way that you just said about kids. Like, yeah, it's all right. He's sober. It's good.
Sure. You know, and it was really in the steps that I was introduced to really what a monster I had become, you know. Like when I put down on my resentment inventory, like there were a bunch of names of people who I wrote down who had never done anything to harm me at all. They had done nothing but try to help me, and I had shit all over them. And then now here I am writing down their name, talking about I'm mad at them.
That is a classic addict move.
That's big time.
It was alcoholism in a nutshell.
It was just so plain to see in my step work that I was just unwilling to accept responsibility for the mess that I had made. And so it was just, you know, everywhere but me. And I was just trying to blame everybody but myself. And like, and with the love and confrontation of my sponsor, you know, like it was kind of like he was holding up a mirror and introduced me to like the fact that I was really like the thing, you know, like I was the, you know, and in all that and in the work that I did, I just really became so so desperate. Like, I mean, I just decided I hated myself. I wound up in another psychiatric ward. And in that psychiatric ward, like, I was, you know, I remember reading about how the past of the history of every alcoholic is played, or every alcoholic is plagued with the specters of humiliation or whatever. Like,
yeah.
And then the past, everything that you're so... you know, feel so guilty and ashamed of, turns to become your asset, and perhaps your only, you know, your
gain insight,
right? And it becomes the fire under your ass to change. And so, I came in with faulty motivation, and I wound up, you know, sticking around for the steps introduced me to why I really needed to be into recovery, and so. I just haven't had that happen with a lot of guys, you know?
Well, but the guys that you see, say when you go do your comedy, a bunch of guys must come up to you. Do you see kind of an apathy or a lack of passion for life in the young people?
Yeah.
Because I would imagine you've now crossed two generations.
Right.
Maybe we're just getting exposed to a certain population. That's the other possibility.
Huh?
Right. And I think that like, it's tough for me to, because the cross section of the, you know, population that I'm encountering,
it's 40
you're talking
to 20.
About, kid,
it's
talking
40
about kids that have the kids that have the motivation to go to my show and then to stick around and like to wait. So by the time they meet me and they're talking to me, like we're talking about a different group of kids.
Is the screening process?
I don't know. I'm guessing it takes some kind of modicum of motivation.
That's true.
I'm just flashing. Steve-O was talking about treatment. One of the funniest moments I ever had was with your dad. I brought it up before. It was really just one of the funniest moments. Were you in the room then? It was you or Barry looking him up. And your dad's head just goes, okay, I think what I need to do is stop. whatever you're going to say, it's not going to be good. I'm like, oh, just go to Al-Anon. What? Probably. No, but I think we got to go. Ted, whatever it is, I'm sure it's a good idea, but I promise you it's going to be the exact opposite of what you need to do.
Right.
Because even if it is the good idea, that's what codependents don't get. Even if it is the good idea that it's coming from them.
Right, so it's not good.
The causation of it is just all off kilter.
Well, the thing about, I remember checking into to Las Encinas, and, you know, we were like, initially the entrance, and we're in the little waiting room. And my dad says, you know, like once we get this fixed, it's going to be great. Once this is behind us, yeah. And he had some other way of saying it. And finally just snapped. I said, Dad, Dad, this doesn't get fixed. Don't put this behind me. I'm a drug addict, Dad. I'm always going to be a drug addict. It's never going to change. It's going to be, and the fact that you're married to mom for 25 years and you still don't understand that is disgusting. And if I'm going to be as serious about this as I am, then you need to be serious about it too. So you have to go to Al-Anon. You have to promise you're going to go to Al-Anon. Otherwise, you're going to sabotage everything. It's going to be nuts.
And I shouldn't even check in.
Are you sure that wasn't down in our office? I swear you said that something like that again.
I'm kind of a little bit with hindsight impressed that, that coming into it that I was as aware of, yep. of what, like what.
Well, listen, do you remember the conversation we had backstage at Adam Carolla's talk show? I think it was before you smashed table.
It was after I smashed the table because they had you there as a backup guest because they didn't trust what was going to happen. Right. You were a backup.
Standing by.
You were a stand-in backup guest and slash babysitter.
slash ER tech. So, do you know this story?
I've seen the table thing.
Yeah, where he flips Adam over and breaks the table.
And that table thing wasn't like a
sign.
You did
it at the MAP dinner too, and they freaked out.
It wasn't like the sign of the end. I mean, like that was so deliberate, the table thing.
No, but backstage, you and I had a conversation where you showed tremendous insight. You went, I was just sort of, like, what about Bastille? How about if? And you're like, look. I understand what you're saying. When I'm ready to do this, I will do this, and I will do it all the way. But I ain't doing that right now. I was like, okay. That was insightful.
I don't remember that conversation as well, I distinctly remember your email asking me if I wanted to be a part of the first season of Celebrity Rehab.
Yeah.
And I remember being so proud of myself. I remember my response word for word. If it wasn't exactly this, it was certainly the gist. I wrote back to Dr. Drew. I said, Drew, I have far too much respect for the recovery process to make a mockery of it on television.
I was just so glad I said no. That's one of those situations again where they're twisting your arm. We're watching this series that talks about how reality producers manipulate people. God damn, they just put my thumbs in screws to do that. But you should know, it was one of my lows. It was one of my lows.
Of
my
course,
life.
Of course, and I get that. And not
because I didn't think it would help you or anything, but because you're my friend, kind of too.
Of course.
I was like, no, that's not right. It's not right.
Of course, and thank God I didn't do it because I don't think it would have been healthy for me.
No,
but I don't think you should really. I don't know. You can sort of feel however you want about it, but the way I look at your involvement is it's like, okay, well, this was going to happen anyway, and Dr. Drew just brought into it like his integrity to help the situation as much as he could.
That was my plan.
We just had a call, and I've heard this that call on the podcast the other day. Hundreds of people have told me that they got sober because of watching that show. It inspired them to watch that show. It's the craziest thing because all it was just chaos.
Yeah.
But somehow addicts were able to identify with it somehow.
Yeah.
This guy just called
it. It also made treatment look less
scary and more accessible. Yeah. Accessible.
The latest incarnation of it, of the Irwin Entertainment.
This is what, the couples show?
No, they had the couples show, and then they got Bam on it. My jackass buddy Bam Margera.
Is it on the couples show?
But it's not the spinoff of the couples show called Family Therapy.
Oh boy!
And
oh,
so they had Bam and his mom.
Is it aired?
They had
or
Michael
it's just
and Dina
shot?
Lohan. It just ran the course, and I watched
Michael
the whole
and
thing.
Dina Lohan.
Michael and Dina Lohan. Like
that's all our former clients.
Not Bam, we
right? No, and who Michael. Else? They had this. I Love New York. Tiffany.
Oh with, yeah.
You know her and her mom. Wow, was that something else? They had Damon Dash and his brothers. I mean, it's compelling TV, but the problem is with any kind of television like that is that meaningful recovery and entertaining television are two
anathema.
They're mutually exclusive concepts. You cannot have one and the other happening at the same time. Yeah. So in any case, I don't know. It's and they had like, oh my god, it was, I just felt this lady, the Dr. Jen who does it, you know, I felt bad for her, like when the one episode came on and they had like all the clients like with like sledgehammers like destroying everything, and that, you know, like we know enough in the world of therapy to know that like that like baseball bat, you know, the soft baseball yeah. bat kind of thing yeah. like
we did like, that on Celebrity Rehab.
I'd forgotten that we did
with
that
the
one
car. We yeah. had a car. We yeah. did the sledgehammers on the car.
Sledgehammers on the car. It's like any kind of physical yeah. violent
destruction. Look at Drew's face right now. Look at his eyes, Steve-O.
We are so...
He had blocked it out.
Yeah. We are so far past that in the world of therapy understand it's, that's not helpful.
No, you're not helpful, but evocative and bad.
Yeah, it's totally bad. People up yeah. too much.
Super, super
Here's
not
what
good.
Does. Two reactions. I didn't do it, but Luisa was in charge of it somehow or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And so they're doing it. Some clients are coming to me going, I don't want to do it. I'm like, I don't, right. they're not, they couldn't stir up the anger. And then the ones that could, holy fuck, what are we going to do with them now? Yeah. These people got to right. go back to the unit.
Right. I felt terrible
that was
for
crazy.
Them. Yeah. Oh man. But, oh well.
I think Luisa took the sledgehammer to it. She wanted to get some out.
I was remembering that's how we got to the point where they were not allowed to speak to me. None of the producers.
Right,
you didn't
okay.
go to it.
No, I think I did because I was super hot.
Yeah,
I
you had to put glasses on.
I wouldn't stay. Was what it was. I was like, I can't.
It's so crazy, right. dude. I would just stand there, just like this is rad.
You liked it?
No, it's just like it's so crazy. I just can't. I don't. You feel like you're on acid. Like this is so crazy. I know real treatment. I know what we're trying to do with these people, and I'm trying to do it 24 hours a day. And then this is just like some
at that
wild,
point,
crazy
at,
thing.
At that point, we sort of compartmentalized. We went, all right, let's look at it as sort of recreation. Remember that? We were yeah, like, yeah. all right, we'll go out and do an outing. We'll let them exert themselves.
But I was shocked by how many people couldn't muster up the anger, which I thought, if there's a therapist here that knows what they're doing, they should be dealing with this. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like not muster up anger. That sounds great. Yeah, go ahead and don't muster it up. Sweet, we're making progress.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to get on TV? Muster up.
Right. Yeah, it's terrible.
I can't believe they did that again. It's too much.
You know, Jason Waller was on, and I work with him now down in Laguna. And he was sober when he came on, right? And so he was trying to
I'm not sure I know who that is.
He's a guy from the Hills and OC and all that.
Young guy.
So he was sober but didn't have a lot of insight about sobriety, but he was sober a couple months when he came on. And so he was talking the talk, not necessarily walking the walk or experienced it, but he was talking the talk and he was not on the show at all. So he was doing the right thing. He was doing his journaling. He was doing the thing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And he loved saying he was this wallpaper,
sure.
right? Because he was just doing what
doing
he was supposed
work.
To be doing.
Yeah, it's boring. Yeah. Recovery is boring in reality.
Oh, yeah.
It really is boring. It's like watching paint dry.
For sure.
But is Bam okay from that experience, or was it neither here nor there?
Yeah, I think... I mean, how he really feels about it, you know, it's tough to say, but he seemed pretty fine about yeah. it.
Well, but the thing about that kind of self-help TV that I've come to realize over the years is you can compartmentalize as the client, as the BAM, and say, oh, it's just television. Like, there's another rapper
right.
that I talked to that I counseled after he did the couple show. And he's just like, oh, that's television. That was just bullshit. I go, well, no, actually, if it was anything like Celebrity Rehab, there was a lot of real stuff going on when the cameras weren't. Oh, it's not. Oh, okay. Well, there was real stuff going on when we were there.
Yep.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, do you understand? Because the people were there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. for 3 weeks, four
How
weeks.
About, what was her name, Amber Smith?
Yeah, she's
she
doing
did
great.
Really well.
Oh, my gosh,
yeah,
she's great.
Doing good.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Uh-huh.
Amazing. And Jenny Ketchum just got her PsyD. Jenny was Penny Flame, the sex addict, and she was a porn star.
Okay.
And we treated her. And she's
there's also a lot of people doing
she's alcohol,
good.
Alcohol,
that's
alcohol,
that's another
marijuana.
Thing about this whole thing. There's a lot of people doing good. Nobody gives a fuck. Yeah. It's true.
Right.
But she just got her PsyD, though.
I see them all the time. Yeah. And it's just like, well, you know, but anybody terrible thing goes on, somebody gets arrested, somebody dies, and it's the top of the food chain entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think of all this terrorism? I wondered what Steve-O's take on terrorism
is. Oh, my God, man.
Your dad made me read a scary book 10 years ago.
All right, yeah.
10 years ago, he told me it was going to get terrible.
Oh, my God. You know, like this past Sunday morning, you know, waking up to the news about the Orlando shooting, I just got frustrated, and I tweeted just two words, fuck guns. Fuck guns!
Oh, you got attacked like crazy.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Fucking
even,
crazy.
I've never inserted myself into the discussion.
That's just two words. That's not much of an insert.
Right, but still, I just could not. I mean, I knew America was fucked up. I knew America was fucked up, but like to see the responses and how like overwhelmingly there just wasn't any like fuck guns, like there was
all
fuck the people who have the fuck the people who use the guns, you know, or like fuck the people like you know, like no, and it's like it's just like wow, you know, like so I just deleted it and then I was like,
did you
now,
feel like a push for deleting it then? I, you want to put
no,
it back
no,
up
well, no, but I didn't want to. I was happy to delete it,
you
but,
should
but I was
have deleted
like,
it and then go back double fuck guns.
Well, no, but then what I wanted to do is I was like, you know what? And then I posted a link to this fantastic Jim Jeffries bit about gun control.
I got that. I think I got that. And I reposted it. Yeah, you posted that.
But he's been doing that bit for like 3 years.
Well, yeah, it came out on his special in 2014.
Yeah.
And,
that's the Australian guy, right?
Yeah, he's
a friend of ours.
So amazing.
He's fantastic, and God bless him. And
we should post that on the This Life pod.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, Jim will come in here, but Jim's a friend of ours.
Oh, we got to do it.
I love Jim Jeffries.
He's next. So you want to come when he's here? You can come. Okay.
He's next here tonight?
No. We got to get him next.
She'll get him.
Yeah, for sure. Just give him my love because I'm fucking so impressed by that guy.
He's a great guy.
On all levels. I love his comedy and I love all of it. And so I posted this link. And then even then, people are like, oh, this is bullshit. Why don't you go move to Australia then?
No more guns. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Fair enough. That makes sense. Fuck you. I like my guns. Don't touch my guns. You know? And so
it really
like,
is amazing. It's just, that even in Australia, they could do something about it. But
right, and so it's just like the dynamic is so fucking scary because you know.
Well, do
that,
you watch where you go? You look.
I don't fucking care, man. You know, like I have like a pretty morbid, like sort of macho kind of outlook on it. Like if someone's gonna shoot me, I'm just glad that I fucking kicked some ass first. You know. You know, go ahead and shoot me, whatever. I don't care. But I remember too thinking that, like, oh well, you know. But the dynamic of like the NRA culture, and then like all these homegrown, like whether they're jihadists or just spree shooters, you know.
Yeah,
but there's
yeah.
And the thing about it, like more than the NRA culture, but what really makes it like a perfect storm is the fucking media and how much they just glorify this. That like it's the media coverage that like. That just makes becoming a mass shooter appealing.
My anger, and then I got attacked last week. So about 50 drug addicts overdose and die every day. So, and they've been covering this Orlando thing, and it's terrible and horrible and hideous.
Sure.
But, you know, 3,000 Americans have died of drug overdoses in the time we've been covering this. Sure. You know what I mean? And nobody covers that at all because they're drug addicts and they fucking deserve what they get. Right. And they fucking,
well, and because there's not you can't put a photo and yeah. that you can't celebrate the drug.
There's
know,
no
like
drama.
In this, like you know, every mass shooting, it's like every fucking channel, everywhere you look, and you're looking at a picture of the guy, and as information comes in, you learn everything there is to know about this fucking guy. We never learn anything about the victims. We just learn everything there is. Know about the
well,
shooter,
which Anderson
makes it
Cooper's
that much more
trying
appealing.
To do that. Anderson Cooper's trying to do that, but it's a little bit like the guy that does good in the therapy TV show.
Right.
I mean, I hate to say it.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But
you're
you know
exactly
what?
Right.
Did you see so, the other Twitter feed or the Facebook thing? That it's not the biggest mass shooting in American history. Wounded Knee is the biggest mass shooting in American
well,
history.
Well, you know what? Like that's a shame because now they've said it enough, the biggest mass shooting. So how many fucking assholes that are just falling into the category of people that you were talking about before that don't have any motivation? They're not, you know, they're just not motivated. These kids that you're talking about, and they're just kind of like, okay, well, I know I'm a loser. I know that I can't do much else about being a loser, and so I could be an unknown loser. Loser, or I could be like epic, go down in the world of the books of history.
I think
epic
there's
loser.
A little bit of that.
Yeah, I could be an epic.
There's a big component of this Orlando thing in that.
In what?
What he's saying.
Yeah, what Bob was talking about initially.
The guy didn't even know what jihadist movement he was a part of. Like a retard jihadist.
Yeah, but you know his story, right? It's bad.
I mean,
in third grade, he was trying to kill other kids.
Yeah, yeah.
He was suspended from high school 48 times.
Yeah, I know.
His dad.
Oh, was he?
His dad believed. Domestic violence repeatedly. His dad believed that he's running. That the dad himself is running a shadow government in Afghanistan, and he doesn't just celebrate the Taliban. He is an enthusiast for the Taliban, and it infected this kid who's not well with all that.
So bullshit. Biology or environment.
Well, I'm sure that'd beat the shit out of him. Dad's delusional. Dad's, you know.
Right. And I don't know. I just
a lot
just
of us get
that.
The shit beat out of us by our dads. We don't do
and,
that.
And don't tell you we're doing this because America's bombing Afghanistan, so I have to turn you into a warrior.
Man. And, like, the fucking media makes it just, I feel like, just so appealing.
But you. But you use the media when you have a message.
Of course, yeah, of course. And
did you see
and,
what Steve did a couple of 6 months
yeah,
ago?
Yeah, Drew knows all about that. We've talked about
the
that one.
Thing, yeah.
Now I did an interview the other day, and it was just.
Or which one you been? You still in trouble for San Diego, or you got the
no,
the
San
crane?
Diego was nothing.
The
I didn't. I paid $239 fine and never heard about
the Hollywood
San Diego
one was
again.
The big one.
Right, the Hollywood one. But I did this interview
and
the other day. SeaWorld
tried to bribe you to come down there and let the killer whales go.
No,
that'd be a smart move on their part.
Ah,
they're gonna let them all go. You know that
they're gonna let them go. They gotta put them into some kind of a sanctuary.
Yeah, they're not.
They
they're
can't.
Not
they,
safe.
They can't.
No, I know.
They
gonna,
can't.
But there are sanctuaries down in South Florida. I thought that it's enclosed, but it's actually as close to nature as they would be.
I haven't heard about them actually physically letting them go. I knew that they're gonna they're not gonna breed anymore, and so the ones they have will be the last.
Yeah.
But I don't know about them letting them go. But now, so I did this interview the other day, and it was, you know, for a documentary called The Hero's Journey, and it's all about
Joseph Campbell.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And it's all about sort of like the ego, and they're talking a lot about Eckhart Tolle and stuff, and social media and sort of the you know, the de-evolution of our society with, you know, all this. It's basically like a celebrity obsession, and like social media represents like the complete backwards progress. And,
yep.
And you know, it's like the talks backwater. It's crazy. Everybody's so worried about their how many likes they get and all the anxiety. And you know, and like I'm totally part of this culture, and so I identify with that so much. But they were telling me that like suicide and depression is just skyrocketing.
Suicide,
just absolutely skyrocketing. And I don't
well, in
know
in white middle-aged males.
Oh yeah,
white middle-aged males is where it's really going nuts.
Man,
and I think the white middle-aged male and the disaffected young man are the same. Something's going on there. I don't know what exactly.
What's a disaffected young man?
The 19-year-olds with no motivation.
Drifting. Okay.
You were drifting, but you were motivated.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I was.
It's a lack of motivation, but Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, I love that story. The power of myth. You ever seen that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know.
You've lived it.
Okay. Well, cool.
You
yeah. But I mean, I just think that so now, like, if we factor in that, okay, so suicide and depression is skyrocketing. You've gotten disaffected, like, people are inclined. Once, like, you're already thinking about suicide, like, why not fucking try to break the record and be the new biggest mass shooter? Yeah. You know, like if we got more people killing themselves,
I think the emphasis on numbers, Drew, comes from the media.
But I think the other thing, what Steve was getting at, which is that if life is so unmeaningful to you that you can kill yourself, it's not a large
leap
to kill other people.
Right. And you know, with the celebrity obsessed culture and, you know,
you become an instant celebrity away.
How easy it is to get the guns and the promise of being the most famous person in the world for days on end. Yeah. There's just like a lot of different ingredients that
me and Jim, I was just pulling that.
Yeah. Just love that guy, man. I just absolutely love that guy. And it's just like, and it's like Jim, you know, when I was posting and I posted the thing and I saw it, he showed up on Twitter right there saying, I just give up. I just give up. You guys have let this happen and it's never going to end.
Who said that?
Jim Jeffries. The morning that the news was coming in about Orlando. He says, you guys have let this happen and it's just not going to end and I just give up.
It is not going to end. Do you see it ending?
No. I think
you know that the NRA, I looked it up, they only give like $4.7 million a year to Congress. Why don't we give them $5 million not to listen to them?
I mean, I don't know.
But I don't understand.
Like, you can't,
wouldn't you think that it's just tens and millions? Well, I guess there's lobbyists is a whole nother category. But direct to re-election campaigns of congressional members, $4.7 million. It's not that much money.
There's limits on it. Right.
But there's lobbyists that somehow represent millions of dollars.
It's America's just not going to pull out of the gun thing.
No.
It's just not.
No. So my thought, I know, follow me. I'm a junkie.
All right.
If the NRA and Big Pharma are controlling things financially, we just need to get other interests to up the ante.
Yeah, but there's no money in boring.
All right.
No, I'm talking about, you know, let's get some baseball teams to kick in. Like, we don't like it.
All right, we're going
to
take a little break. Be right back.
All right, bye.
I'm getting involved with the advisory board at an organization called HEAL, H-E-A-L, and they have an app. It's called HEAL app, H-E-A-L. And these guys promise a physician at your home within 2 hours. And it is $99 all in. And most insurances cover it. These physicians are carefully selected by our team. They are all board certified, so we can vouch for them. And everyone we know that has used this product is just beside themselves happy. Do not go to an ER. Do not go to an urgent care. If you're in a city covered by HEAL, click HEAL. $99. Someone will be there. And people don't understand that what you really want is just a physician to use their judgment to tell you what this is. Is it serious? Is it not? The treatments are often simple. There is just simply today, unless there's a real emergency, no reason to go to the ER. And I would suggest even going to an urgent care when you're feeling bad, need help. I mean, why do that? And by the way, that's much more expensive. Sounds too good to be true. It is not. This is an opportunity. Check out the HEAL app. Hey, we're back. And I don't know what other interests you're talking about.
Well, there's so many
other interests out there.
Yeah, why
no
wouldn't
idea.
GE? Why? Okay, I know a lot of big leaders of industry are disgusted by this. Why doesn't Sumner Redstone to do a little PR for himself give $10 million to Congress? Just start upping the ante.
I don't know.
Yeah, let's get the carrot lobby.
Dude, there's multis of billions of dollars in carrots, Steve-O. Don't make fun of carrots. One time I had a client, the guy was the king of strawberries. I had a lot of dough.
That's awesome.
But
What are you looking forward to? What's coming up? Where can we see you? Where can people find you?
Man, you know, like my big thing was the comedy special that I was promoting with you on Loveline. Who knew that I was sneaking into Loveline right under the wire?
I know, right? I didn't know either.
Oh, yeah?
I knew it was sort of trouble, but I didn't realize it was imminent.
I was just flabbergasted. I mean, I knew that Loveline had essentially turned into a podcast.
Were you the last guest?
I wasn't quite the last guest, but maybe not far off.
6 weeks before we stop, eight weeks.
Yeah, okay, and then nowhere near.
But that's a show that's 35 years, that's near.
Right. Was Eddie Ift going to be a co-host?
You mean, what were they doing with putting people in there at the end? I have no idea what they were doing.
Because I was under the impression that he was...
He sat in 3 nights.
Right, okay.
But I don't know, there was no audition.
Remember, like, I sat in a few nights and then I announced.
What is that?
At the K-Rock's
Christmas party?
Acoustic Christmas.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, and I announced. Oh!
Did you sit on the keys?
I blocked someone in. Yeah, I'm the Ford Fusion Hybrid.
Electric?
Oh, I wonder, did I sit on the thing?
I think you sat on the alarm.
There it goes.
There we go.
Perfect.
Sorry about
Dogs
that.
Dogs are barking. Horns are honking.
Now, what's that?
No, that's your car now.
Mine?
Do you have an earthquake or something?
What's going on? So.
Yeah, but in any case, see, I did my comedy special. I got my comedy tour dates. They're all on Stevo.com if anybody's interested.
Right. Everybody's interested. There's no one. Steve, take a compliment.
Well, thanks,
anytime
man.
Your name, anytime the mention of your name, people smile.
Well, I appreciate that a lot, man. I really do. And you know, I've written a movie that I'm working on getting made. And
awesome!
So I'm excited.
What's
about
it about? Can you tell?
Yeah, it's like
guy with a loose circle,
a liberal circle.
No, it ends with the liberal circle. It starts with him. Being a guinea pig for medical research.
And,
that's a great movie. That's a great arc. That's a character arc.
It's running from the law. In the beginning of the movie, I'm gonna go visit my grandma. And she's gonna say, "Look, you take this wedding ring. If you lose this girl, you have you're an idiot, and you propose to her, and I'm gonna the ring's gonna be stolen by these thugs and whatever. And I'm gonna find in their pawn shop, and I'm gonna knock the guy out of the pawn shop, steal the ring, and you know."
Antics ensue.
When I run out of the pawn shop, someone's going to be getting into their car. I'm going to throw them out of their car and steal their car to get away with the ring. But it's going to be in reverse. And I don't realize I'm going to jam it through the window. It'll be all like the gags too.
Have you ever seen? Doesn't Buster Keaton has a movie like that?
I'm gonna drive away, and as I drive away, the cops are on me, and they're chasing me over a bridge. I'm gonna put the car in cruise control, climb out the window while it drives itself, and then stand on the dive off the bridge off the moving car. So I'll actually get away, but I'll have committed enough crimes.
You can do the stunt.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna do every stunt.
Oh yeah, see, that's the Buster Keaton thing.
Yeah,
Bob.
It's gonna be like
Buster
Jackie
Keaton
Chan
movie
kind of
where
deal.
He has to get married by noon.
Yeah, but he did all his
Remember,
own
have
stunts.
You ever seen it? You got to watch it, Steve.
Right. Okay.
It's a Buster Keaton movie where it's similar. He has to get married by noon, and the cops are chasing him. And you got to see it.
I'm gonna get away from the cops, but the thing is that I'll have committed enough crimes in my crime spree. I'm kind of, you know, on all the news and, you know, sort of a viral, like, wow, we haven't seen a criminal this dumb before. So everybody knows I'm wanted, and so everywhere I go, I have to, as I work my way back to propose to my girl, I gotta sort of take on impromptu disguises to evade capture, and so I'm running from the law, trying to get to my girl, and it's sort of a road trip movie. And then when I do get to the girl, the cavalry kind of comes in, and
ooh. You get married, and then you go to jail.
Like, yeah, I'm gonna have to go to jail for a little bit first, but yeah, I'll get married.
It's a Pee Wee a little bit.
Yeah, very much. Pee Wee, Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
What's it called?
I don't know yet. Working title is Daryl Hecht.
Daryl Hecht, is that the character?
Yeah.
I like that.
It's a real Daryl.
I like Daryl.
Anybody who names their kid Daryl.
They always have a mullet, whoever they are.
Yeah, my buddies and I were always like, well, what a Daryl.
That boy's not a Daryl. He's a derelict.
That's why his last name is Hecht.
Daryl Hecht.
Daryl Hecht. Anyway, I don't know. I'm really excited about it. So we're all...
All right, Bobby.
No, it won't stop.
We can wrap this thing up.
Such a baby.
I know. My dog keeps loving Steve-O.
Such a baby.
He will lick your head off.
Let's promote
whatever we fucked up and didn't promote when we started.
I think we're good. Just click on the Amazon banner. Check out the people that support
us. Did you want to throw in an ad for Subutext?
Yeah. We need more Suboxone in America. There's not enough guns. Here's the thing. There's not enough guns in America, and there's not enough Suboxone.
Right.
We're running out of these things.
Right, yeah.
More guns, more Suboxone.
Right. Well, I remember on our second... We had this Jackass 2.5, and there was a bit where Preston, the big fat guy, was really scared to do something, you know, on one day, and it was like sort of overcast, and he was too scared. But then on the second day, we did the same thing, but he took some Xanax, and the sun came out, and he was ready to go. Oh. And as they put it together, they cut it with me and said, when the chips are down and life really sucks, Xanax.
But you know what? The reason I like 3D so much was because you were having real feelings.
Oh, for sure.
You were like, oh man, Steve was freaked the hell out.
For sure.
Because he wasn't loaded anymore. Somebody was actually throwing a, can hit a baseball bat at his balls. He knew that was not going to feel good.
Hello.
Well, it's great to see you always.
Yes. Always. I love
pleasure,
you. I
man.
Love you both.
Love you guys.
All right. See you next time.
See you later.
Waiting for you to come around. I've been finding mountains to climb, but I find that roll down. If you must go away, hey,
Stanley.